It is Monday, April 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson vows a new commitment to protect civilians around the world. We examine increasing tensions on the Korean Peninsula, and we look at new skills to be learned from playing board games. It's all ahead. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has promised a new U.S. commitment to facing the world's aggressors who attack their citizens. He's participating in a G7 foreign ministers meeting in Italy. The meetings follow last week's U.S. missile strikes against Syria. I asked VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain about Secretary Tillerson's effort to promote unity among his colleagues.
The Italians are very interested in trying to prevent any sort of further escalation after the surprising U.S. military strikes on the Syrian airfield last week. And Secretary Tillerson did visit an Italian war memorial Monday, a World War II memorial where Nazis massacred more than 500 civilians. And he said that the U.S. wants to rededicate itself to holding account anyone who commits crimes against innocence anywhere in the world. So I believe U.S. allies are a bit puzzled as to what those Syrian airstrikes mean and what the U.S. position is.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, because what is the response toward that? I mean, it seems like British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson supports the U.S. action, but what are some of the reaction from some of the other foreign ministers?
Well, there did seem to be at least understanding from Germany and other countries about saying that basically Assad had brought that on himself, and he was brutally attacking civilians, so he was responsible for what happened to him. But they're also, at the same time, Germany, for example, reemphasized that political negotiations, political peace talks are needed. And also, the other countries are also trying to give the U.S. support, give Secretary Tillerson support for his talks in Russia. He will be leaving Italy and going straight to Moscow. And the other countries are very interested in saying, look, Russia needs to stop propping up the Syrian President Assad.
Yes, Secretary Tillerson's his next stop will be Moscow. And certainly going into these talks between Mr. Tillerson and Russian officials, that's going to be probably a pretty tense encounter, I would think, particularly following these Syrian airstrikes.
Yes, I think so too, Sarah, to the point where we're not even sure now whether Secretary Tillerson will be meeting with Russian President Putin or just with his counterpart, the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov. And the Kremlin is saying that, you know, no meeting was on the schedule with President Putin. But in the past, you know, former secretaries of state, usually when they go to Moscow, they do meet with President Putin. So, you know, not sure if Russia is trying to signal that it's annoyed with airstrikes or what the reason is. But it would definitely look like that it's going to be a tense meeting, and we're not sure how far Tillerson, who's had good contacts in the past as the CEO of Exxon with Russian President Putin, how hard he's going to push the Russians to stop propping up Assad.
That's VOA State Department correspondent Cindy Sain. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's trending?
Well, more than a year-long battle over the Supreme Court of the United States came to an end today as Neil Gorsuch was sworn in as the 101st Associate Justice to the Supreme Court. So that's getting a lot of attention. The moment of that swearing-in, the ceremonial swearing-in in the Rose Garden, being shared across social media, and a lot of speculation about what kind of justice he's going to be. People hoping he'll be a fair judge and stick to the law, not imbue politics into his decisions. In fact, that's one of the fears that we're seeing expressed on social media, that he'll uphold some controversial laws based strictly on politics and not on the legal precedent. And then you're hearing the name Merrick Garland a lot again. Of course, he was the nominee that was proposed by President Obama, who was not confirmed. The Senate said that because it was an election year, they were not going to confirm him. Others saying Gorsuch is a conservative replacing a conservative, the late Antonin Scalia. So really, there's no change on the court. It's just maintaining what the makeup of the court was previously. So a lot of reaction to that. Also, a lot of reaction today to a viral video about a United Airlines flight from Chicago, Illinois to Louisville, Kentucky. The flight was overbooked, and they asked for volunteers to leave the flight and be compensated. No one volunteered. Everybody wanted to get home, so they picked people at random. Now, one of the people they picked was a gentleman who said he was a doctor, and he wanted to get home to see his patients, and he refused to leave. And he was literally dragged off the plane by police officers. As the passengers around him were shouting and asking what they were doing. Of course, everybody nowadays has a smartphone in their pocket. So we saw multiple videos of this incident being posted on social media, multiple angles from the plane. I mean, it's only maybe a 50 or 60 seat plane, and I've seen three or four different angles of this incident go down. And a lot of anger at United. United's been in trouble on social media in recent weeks because of that incident where they didn't let the young girls board because they were wearing leggings, which didn't go with the dress code for the pass that they were using to travel. So a lot of people saying United won't have any overbooking issues in the future because they won't fly with them anymore, and that they're claiming the mantle of most hated airline. And only in social media can you get a tweet like this. It said, breaking news, United Airlines forcibly removes Judge Merrick Garland from seat, gives seat to Judge Neil Gorsuch. So people combining the two stories together on a little joke there about this incident.
Yeah, I don't think United is the only airline that overbooks either.
No, it's they all do it, but this is the one that's giving getting bad publicity.
Right. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor, Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Somali forces take over a boat seized by pirates. Sweden holds a moment of silence after the deadly truck attack. Neil Gorsuch is sworn in as justice to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the military downplays a report that an aircraft was spotted close to Air Force One. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers say they have found what could be a twin of Earth's neighbor, Venus. The Venus-like exoplanet is about 219 light-years away, slightly larger than Earth, and orbits a dim, cool M-dwarf star that's one-fifth the diameter of our own sun. The planet, called Kepler-1649b, appears to orbit tight and close to its host star and completes an orbit around it in only 9 days. Although its star is much weaker than our Sun, since Kepler-1649b orbits so close, it receives 2.3 times the solar radiant energy than Earth. While some recent exoplanet discoveries have uncovered Earth-like planets orbiting M-dwarf stars, this new discovery suggests that some of these planets could very well be more like Venus. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, new lessons to be learned from board games. China's Special Representative for Korean Peninsula Affairs is in Seoul for talks on the North Korean nuclear threat. As a U.S. carrier strike group moves toward the Korean Peninsula amid Pyongyang's pursuit of nuclear weapons and an intercontinental ballistic missile to deliver them. U.S. National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster said Sunday President Donald Trump, fresh from a summit with his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping, has requested a full range of options to deal with the North Korean threat.
This is a rogue regime that is now a nuclear capable regime. And President Xi and President Trump agreed that that is unacceptable, that what must happen is the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. And so the president has asked us to be prepared to give him a full range of options to remove that threat to the American people and to our allies and partners in the region.
McMaster called the deployment of the USS Carl Vinson strike group prudent. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said Sunday last week's missile strike on Syria was intended to send a clear signal to countries like North Korea.
The message that any nation can take is if you violate international norms, if you violate international agreements, if you fail to live up to commitments, if you become a threat to others, at some point a response is likely to be undertaken. And I think in terms of North Korea, we've been very clear that our objective is a denuclearized Korean peninsula.
Tillerson said China's President Xi clearly understands and may agree that the situation on the Korean Peninsula has intensified and reached a certain level of threat that action has to be taken. RAND Corporation defense analyst Bruce Bennett tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the aircraft carrier USS Carl Vinson is accompanied by two guided missile destroyers and a guided missile cruiser.
We talk about it as a naval strike group. It is also a naval missile defense group. And so it brings a number of capabilities with it that the president could potentially use. And I think that's what he wants to have a clear idea about.
So what would he do? Would he shoot down another missile test if it's to be launched?
Well, I think that having three more ships with that kind of capability up in the Sea of Japan, East Sea area, would give him that option, potentially, yes.
What message does it send to not just the North, but China?
The message we would send to the North would be that the UN Security Council resolutions have banned you from doing this, and now if you do them, not only will you be violating the sanctions, but you will force us to stop you from doing it by shooting your missiles down. To China, of course, this would be a message that said, look, we tried to get you to take economic actions against the North, and you preferred that we take military action. Sorry we had to do that, but it was your choice.
This comes just days after President Trump met with his Chinese counterpart.
They tended to indicate after the meeting that they established personal relations, but not much in terms of a business agenda for the future. So we could see unilateral U.S. action.
What would China's reaction be, do you think?
Really hard to tell. The Chinese government, as I understand it, has been split on this whole subject. Shooting down a North Korean missile does not jeopardize the North Korean regime. That's the issue China's most concerned about. So Xi Jinping, the leader of China, he's probably going to feel like, well, this is aggressive U.S. behavior, but not something we're going to be as upset about as other things the U.S. could have done.
However, Bruce Bennett said if a preemptive attack was ordered, the Carl Vinson Naval Force is only capable of a surgical strike and would not be able to eliminate the North Korean nuclear threat. He said that would pose a serious threat to the lives of South Koreans. Well, despite ethical and safety concerns, researchers are getting closer to building life from scratch. In fact, scientists are hoping to synthesize a human genome in the next 10 years. Technology investors are putting huge amounts of money into the research that may deliver novel drugs, materials, and chemicals. Some of the projects were highlighted at a recent synthetic biology conference in London. VOA's Deborah Block has this report.
It sounds like science fiction. Laboratories working on designer babies and bringing back the extinct woolly mammoth. But both could be a possibility for scientists who are working closer than ever to creating artificial life. At the SynBio Beta conference in London, synthetic biologist Drew Endy said the cost of synthesizing DNA, the building blocks of life, is now less costly, opening up more avenues for research.
When I first started teaching at MIT, building one letter of DNA from scratch cost $4 a letter. Today it's 4 cents a letter. And you know, the consequence of that is I used to order designs for my students, say 20,000 base pairs of DNA. This year, this spring, I'm ordering 10 million base pairs of DNA.
Recently, a group of global researchers announced they are close to building a complete artificial genome for baker's yeast. Endy envisions a new, more productive synthetic yeast 2.0.
Yeast is an important organism because it makes beer. It makes bread and wine and so on. So what might yeast 2.0 be good at making? And the answer is not totally obvious yet, but it seems like it'll be useful for making any medicine that's now sourced from a plant. Any plant natural product, for example, could probably be made in a fermenter with brewing. And yeast 2.0 will make that process more reliable, more readily distributable.
But synthetic biology, like other forms of genetic engineering, has its critics, especially in the areas of the environment and food. Advocates for the research believe this is not justified.
A lot of folks are concerned with things that you might take in. And would that change your DNA? Of course not. Now, you have your own DNA. If you eat an apple or Arctic apple, where we have silenced an enzyme so that when you slice the apple, it doesn't turn brown. You can eat that apple and it tastes as good as any other, and probably better.
To help fight the Zika virus, Intrexon is using the technology to create millions of genetically altered mosquitoes. They will be released in Brazil to try to curtail mosquitoes carrying the Zika virus. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world, and you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Taking turns, taking risks, and following the rules are lessons people can learn by playing games. One road to those skills is old-fashioned board games, where people sit together and move tiny figurines on a special board. In most board games, only one player wins, and everyone else must accept defeat. But a newer style teaches a different skill. In these games, the deck is stacked against everyone. Players only win if they cooperate. From a game cafe in Berkeley, California, Shelley Schlendler reports.
No. Does that mean that we're done? Is that it?
It may be that we're done.
No. They're not done yet. Still, suspense is high at the Victory Point Cafe in Berkeley, California, as these three friends huddle over a colorful board and move thimble-sized figurines. Their goal is to save the world from pestilence and death. If they fail, a pandemic of little disease cubes will pile up on the board, signaling the destruction of all humankind. And in this board game, named Pandemic, Yanni says diseases usually win.
People have created this game to make you lose, so it's a challenge mentally.
As their next mental challenge, Yanni's team must draw from a diabolical deck that's filled with cards that make even more disease cubes pile up. To reduce another disaster, the friends decide to build a little hospital.
Oh, you want me to build?
Either
you want me to build it?
Or if you give me two cards, then I guess I can build it, I think.
Every turn, we're all talking about the turn we're taking together.
They draw a card from that dangerous deck.
Oh, so good.
And survive.
That was so lucky.
Yanni says that when he's hanging out with friends, he likes board games.
It's kind of social at the same time. It's not something you do on your own. I used to play a lot of computer games, and that's fun, but it's between you and a computer screen. Even if you're online and playing with other people, it's not. Here, you're like literally in person, and you're... Yeah, you play a game together, whether it's cooperated or competitive, you're socializing in a way, and it's entertaining.
To help with all that socializing, the Victory Point Cafe offers patrons beer, coffee, and board games. Nora, the assistant manager, says those board games are a big part of the appeal.
You know, you can play video games with other people, but you don't look at them necessarily face to face over a board that you share pieces on and that sort of thing. You can't hand things to other people. It's just very tactile and very visual, and you know, I feel like it uses more engagement and people crave that.
The Victory Point Cafe offers a wall full of board games that customers can borrow, and most of these games are competitive. But Nora likes the cooperative games, such as Pandemic.
There's something about cooperative games that I just find really enjoyable and almost comforting because you're working together.
Yeah, I like playing games because I always win.
At Carlikan's Hobby Shop in Boulder, Colorado, the board game buddies prefer competition, whether it's a colorful board and a deck of cards or a lively game of dice.
Cooperative games, you can't feel the twist of the knife. There's kind of no reward and no penalty for failing cooperative games. It's a little better than watching television, but not by much.
But cooperative games have their fans.
My favorite cooperative is Ghost Stories. You're protecting a village against an onslaught of ghosts.
My Mansions favorite. Of Madness, but I really love that one, and it's cool.
I don't know. My favorite still is probably Super Dungeon Explorer.
Back at Victory Point, it's a pandemic cliffhanger.
Just barely, razor thin.
One turn away.
Yanni's team saves the world from pestilence and death. As for what this means in the game of life.
Well, if your life is having to cure a disease before it kills everyone in the world, then yes, I guess it's a metaphor for life.
Yet in a world that needs people solving problems together, Yanni says that playing cooperatively speaks to him.
We have a very good team when we're playing together. And if we didn't have this level of teamwork, we wouldn't have been able to do it. We would have lost the game.
Board game fans say that win, lose, or cooperate, anyone who finds a game they love will have a grand adventure. For VOA News, I'm Shelley Schlender in Berkeley, California.
A lot to be learned from board games. Well, that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
During the month of April, the United States has assumed the rotating presidency of the UN Security Council. Speaking recently at the Council of Foreign Relations in New York, U.S. Permanent Representative to the UN, Ambassador Nikki Haley, said one of the vital issues the United States intends to put on the Security Council's agenda this month is the role human rights abuses play in the breakdown of international peace and security. For too long, she said, peace and security were considered the Security Council's purview, while human rights were kept separate and left to others. The fact is, she noted, peace and security cannot be achieved in isolation from human rights. In case after case, human rights abuses are not the byproduct of conflict, they are the cause of conflict, or they are the fuel that feeds the conflict. Desperate people robbed of their humanity and subject to humiliation and abuse inevitably want revenge, Ambassador Haley said, and they are also vulnerable to manipulation or coercion by extremist groups. In North Korea, she pointed out, human rights abuses literally provide some of the financing for aggression. Political prisoners are forced to work themselves to death in coal mines to finance the regime's nuclear program. In other cases, such as Syria, human rights abuses are used as weapons of war. The Assad regime, Ambassador Haley said, uses torture, including the deliberate, systematic torture of children, to identify and silence opponents. Pro-government forces in Syria have systematically targeted civilian infrastructure, including hospitals. Assad's crimes have led to the greatest refugee crisis since World War II. What was once a brutal crackdown on peaceful protesters, she added, is now a six-sided conflict and a great power proxy war. The time has come for the Security Council to explicitly consider the connections between human rights and security, Ambassador Haley said. This debate is one that's worth having. It would greatly strengthen the work of the Security Council, and it's the right thing to do. Ambassador Haley observed, it will be very telling if any country tries to block this debate. It's past time that the Security Council acknowledge the importance of human rights abuses and demand that its member nations do the same.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.